Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Larry Smith from Larry Smith Outdoors on the show for the first time. I wanted to have Larry on to share some perspective, maybe some insights on his own skills and abilities as an angler, stories that I never knew about, never heard about. And it's fun, man. It's fun to go deep with Larry in this conversation. Hopefully, it's the first of many. So let's get to it here. We've got Larry Smith from Larry Smith Outdoors on the JMO Podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO Podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Head to their website, tkicnc.com, to find a full listing of their offerings. There you're going to find for this ice season the deluxe TKI sonar shuttle or the collapsible carbon fiber pole mounting kit. For top-of-the-line, American-made fishing equipment, head to tkicnc.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast. I want to spend some time getting to know you as an angler, but a little bit more personally, because I think there's a million things here that I, as a fan of yours for a long time, I don't think that I really know. Right out the gate, I want to figure out, where does your passion for fishing and this whole life and lifestyle that you've built, where does that start? Where you're from? Where did you cut your teeth in fishing? What are just some of the great memories that you have looking back that describe you coming up as an angler and building your passion? And even if you go for a long time and just get me all the way up to where you're at today, you can talk for a half hour if you want to, but I'm just so curious about your fishing story going way back. Go ahead.
Well, really what kind of got me going it was a bad childhood, right? I went into a foster home when I was just turning 11 years old. My mom and dad got divorced. My mom basically said, hey, if I wanted to continue to live with her, I would have to give up fishing and I would never be able to hunt when I turned 12. Because back then you had to be 12 to hunt. And my dad was a big hunter and a big fisherman. So really the passion for fishing has always kind of been there, but that's always been my crutch, right? Something that I've always leaned on to get me through the bad times. And, basically I always say this is that fishing for me is an addiction. It really is. Everybody in life has got addictions, Some people it's their phone, some people it's alcohol, some people it's cigarettes, but for me, it's definitely, I've leaned in the wrong direction many of times, gone down that, especially when I was younger, down the wrong path. And the thing that always kind of pulled me back once things start going down in the wrong direction was fishing, right? So again, it's an addiction more than anything. I have a hard time going a very long time period, like I would say more than 2 or 3 days without fishing, right? It just, that's where it all kind of stems from that. It was, you know, again, it was something that as a kid growing up, I was severely ADHD, like severely. I only slept like 2.5 hours. And I drove my mom absolutely crazy. That's why she definitely, I was not her favorite child for sure, because of that, you know. And at that time back then, they didn't really know how to deal with things like that. They didn't have all these crazy drugs like they have now for these kids. So it was definitely a challenge for her. And, you know, so, but the only thing that I could ever concentrate on was like fishing. Like I could go down to the river and sit there and stare at that line and that pole out in that current out there for hours upon hours without even getting a bite, because your mind starts, you start looking out there and you start imagining what's swimming down below that water, you know. So that was always a cool thing for me. It was like, it was definitely my drug, you know, was fishing. It calmed me down. It just, it helped me focus on things. And the thing that I love about the outdoors, and especially the fishing part of it, is that it's not repetitious, right? If fishing was constantly easy, repetitious, I would have been bored with it a long time ago again, because, you know, for me, it's always about figuring things out. You know, I'm way past that point of like catching fish. Yeah, it's always fun. Don't get me wrong on that end, but figuring out why these fish are there or why they're not there. And that's where kind of the guiding part really comes into play too, is I think this is my 34th or 35th year guiding full time. And, you know, before I started the show, I was on the water probably 320 plus days a year guiding. And now I'm still probably hitting the water, I would say pretty close to 300 days, but you know, there's definitely some travel time in there for the show and filming shows and stuff like that. So, you know, I just, one of them kind of things where, you know, I always thought once I started the TV show that I was going to give up the guiding part, and I kind of started leaning back a little bit off of it and spending a little bit more time in the office in the production part of it. And I just realized that it's just not my place to be. So, you know, it's easier to have a couple really good people working for you and let them do the editing and do that part of it. I just kind of bring in some of the creative ends of it and the things that I think that like in the industry that I would want to see. Like I always remember like my favorite show as a kid growing up was obviously the In Fisherman, Al Linder, Ron Linder, them guys. And the reason why, because every time you would watch one of their shows at the end of the show, the first thing you wanted to do is go grab a fishing pole and go out fishing somewhere, because you learn something from the show. And the other part is the enthusiasm that they had for fishing, right? Them guys are very passionate about what they did. And then with me over my guiding career, I was very fortunate to be able to film with a lot of different people that had TV shows to promote my guiding business. And that really kind of really got it sparked off and got it going good. But I never felt that any of them people were like truly, they were all good guys, all good people, but I didn't really feel like they were very passionate about, like, they didn't live to fish like I lived to fish, right? They did it for a career, they did it for a job, but that wasn't their main hobby and their main passion. And that's what really kind of sparked me on starting my own show too, is like, because I am so passionate about the outdoors and about the fishing part, but also very passionate about people. And, you know, when it comes to the guiding part, I'm, you know, there's a lot of people that are better fishermen than I am, but I always say like, I consider myself a pretty top-notch guide because of the passion that I have for other people, right? And I think that's like 70% of guiding is being a people's person and being able to relate to the people that you're with and to really want them to spend more time with you. And that's, and repeat business when it comes to guiding is everything, right? It really is. And, you know, it's kind of funny when I started guiding like out on Winnebago, 34, 35 years ago, there really was no other people and nobody else was really guiding. One guy was doing it kind of part-time, but it was not a big thing. And kind of a lot of people kind of laughed at me about taking that career path and taking up guiding for a living. But now I look back at it all and think to myself, like, you know, there's probably at least 20, maybe 25 full-time guides on Winnebago now, and there's probably another 50 part-time guys that between Winnebago and Green Bay. So the whole guiding thing in the last 30 years has just absolutely exploded.
Like, I'm so curious about how fishing became a career and what were the experiences or elements in your life that sort of lined up to like make that a reality for you?
Yeah, the interesting part is how it kind of all came about is that I started fishing a bunch of local tournaments with a friend of mine, Jimmy Hughes. And we were at a tournament in Oshkosh, and a guy actually came up to me that had a business in Oshkosh, still has a business in Oshkosh, and said, "Hey, would you be interested in guiding some of my, you know, clientele? We like to do guide trips." And I never even thought about guiding at that time. And he didn't want to really do it. Jim didn't want to do it. But I said, "Hey, you know what? I'll give it a shot." And it kind of started from there. And then one of my first sponsors that I had was HT Enterprise. They're right out of Campbellsport. And at that time, they were doing some marketing with John Gillespie, and they said, "Hey, do you want to film a show with this John Gillespie guy?" And I really didn't know him back then. I think he had started this show maybe 2 or 3 years before I met him. And we went out, and basically that was like the first person that I started filming TV shows. And really, that really was unbelievable. Like, you know, back in the day, like, you got to think about, like, John Gillespie, he was the only guy in the whole country that was filming a brand new TV show every week. Like, no, he was cutting edge, you know, and he really wasn't a fisherman either, right? But he came from the TV world, and he knew about production, and he knew about, you know, he was a sportscaster, so he knew about all that. And his big thing was, because he wasn't really a fisherman, was to hire guides or to have guides, and it basically was a wash. But, you know, there was times that I did shows with him that, you know, like, 100 phone calls was not uncommon. Like, you never see that anymore just because things are so diluted down. But yeah, I mean, it was just absolutely crazy the amount of business that I got. And really, that's kind of what started my whole career off into the professional, you know, fishing part of it, the guiding part. And then I got into tournament angling. And the reason I got into tournament angling was, you know, you start guiding and you're guiding every day, and you get into that routine where you know everything so well. It's kind of like your backyard. You know it so well, and you kind of get stuck on the same techniques, get stuck on the same things. And I just thought to myself, you know, I need to expand my horizon. I need some fire behind me, and really getting into the competition part was really what really drove that part. It was because I was really pretty fortunate. I got into fishing it was called NAWA back then, and I actually got Rookie of the Year for that. And then I a couple of years later, I started fishing the PWT, and then I got Rookie of the Year for that. So I started off on a pretty good track on that. But and I did that for about 11 years, and then we started having kids, and I was guiding full time, and I got a farm, and I had a lot of stuff going on. And then the economy started taking a turn, and I thought to myself, you know, I better stay stick to my guiding part. I got a family at home. My wife was, you know, she's the one with a college education, but she was at home with, you know, we had three kids then, and then I ended up having another one. So four kids. And I just thought to myself, I got to get out of this tournament stuff because it's not really a guarantee, you know, paycheck every week. And I didn't want to neglect my guiding business. So I kind of hung that up. And it's kind of interesting because I went out and I started the year off fishing the FLW, you know, because that was the series to fish. I fished that for a few years, RCL, FLW. And I said to myself, this is kind of an interesting story. I said to myself, I'm going to fish the first tournament. I told my wife, and it was on Lake Erie, if I don't win this tournament, I'm not fishing any tournaments ever again. Well, to make a long story short, I ended up taking second and I lost that tournament from first to second by 6 ounces.
Oh my.
Yeah. So yeah, it was one of them kind of things where it was, you know, it was God basically saying, hey, Larry, you know what? It's time for you to give up on the tournament stuff and focus on something else, you know? So, you know, so I gave up on that, started, you know, or went back to the guiding part and was on the grind, you know, just grinding basically, you know, that 320 plus days a year guiding and farming on the side and always, you know, that's a part too about, you know, the guiding is always having something to back it up with. I've always been that way. Everything I've ever done in life, I've always had multiple jobs. Like even now, you know, we still farm. I still guide. I have the production company and the TV show. And I do a little bit of stuff with some land too. So it's always something to do, right? You know, and that's the part too about having, you know, having a business, especially the guiding part, because there is times where you're in between seasons. Sometimes that only lasts a couple weeks. Sometimes it could be a month. And there's also days where it's just the weather is just horrific and, you know, people don't want to go, right? So, you know, and I had a taxidermy business at that time too.
Goodness, right? Larry.
So, yeah, there's not much that I didn't have going on, right? You know, but the great part about all this stuff, and I kind of am skipping around here, but I started doing taxidermy when I was 11 years old. I gave it up about 15 years ago. But the taxidermy part and the guiding part worked absolutely fantastic because the neat part was, and I really at the end of the last probably 15 years of my taxidermy career, I just strictly did waterfowl mostly and some other upland birds, but birds were my thing. I was mounting, I don't even know, probably, you know, close to 60 to 100 birds a year. But the great part was if I knew I was going to be off that next day, I could take something out of the freezer. I always had plenty of supplies. I still have a really nice shop on my farm here. And so I would take something out and I would mount it. So always having that income coming in is definitely, that's a key thing, you know? The guiding part, I think, like the interesting part, and again, I'm jumping around, it's that ADHD stuff. But I think the interesting part about this is like how many people have gotten into the guiding world. And realistically, if you're just going to lean on the guiding world, it's probably not the best profession to go into if you're doing it to provide for your family, unless you got something else that you can back that up with. Like the taxidermy thing for me worked out absolutely fantastic. And you know, the other part I say about guiding, if you're not a winter guide, an ice guide, you know, you're definitely it's gonna set you back for sure, because the ice guiding part when it comes to a full-time career in the guiding world is extremely important because of in the winter you can, you know, in the summer you're in your boat, you can take, you know, depends on how big your boat is, so let's just say you can take 3 to 6 people, you know, and that's what you're limited at, right? And plus if like we have captain's license here for the waters that we fish, Winnebago and Green Bay, so you have a 6-pack license, so you can only have 6 clients on your boat, right? But the thing is about ice guiding, most days we have between 20 to sometimes up to 40 people, right? So you think about, like, it's a big revenue source to ice guiding. So if you're looking at becoming a full-time guide, you cannot do it and make enough money to survive without being an ice guide too.
TKI CNC produces reliable, meticulously crafted marine components for every fishing adventure. Head to their website, tkicnc.com, to find a full listing of their offerings. There you're going to find, for this ice season, the deluxe TKI sonar shuttle or the collapsible carbon fiber pole mounting kit. For top-of-the-line, American-made fishing equipment, head to tkicnc.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Sealcraft brings innovation and revolution to ice fishing. If you fish early or late ice anywhere, or maybe you fish big reservoirs where ice conditions are constantly changing, basically anywhere that ice can be dangerous, Sealcraft is the solution for safe transport across the ice. For pictures and videos of the brand new Sealcrafts in action, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. Those links are in the description of this podcast.
The way that you talked about getting into the, you know, into the industry and your careers and describing your career, is there also a moment or sort of maybe there's a story or multiple or a way of maybe putting a finger on when you experienced or were exposed to fishing on a higher level that sort of contributed to your just sort of your ability to do the tournament fishing and be, you know, asked to come and be a fishing guide? Like, was there a moment back then, maybe observing something where you saw somebody do something or you went to a seminar, or is it all just kind of self-taught over time grinding? Like, how would you answer that?
Well, let me go in a couple directions. You know, I was very, very fortunate in my career as a young guide growing up, is that a couple of, well, especially the one guy, his name is Rody Bricky, he's long passed now, but he was an old Polish guy, cranky son of a buck, but he was unbelievable when his talents, when it came to fishing. He did a little musky guiding on the side, but he was a low key person. And, you know, this is the interesting part, is that, you know, I have been very fortunate in my career to meet a lot of people that are like, their fishing abilities are outstanding, right? And this Rody Bricky that I'm telling you about, he was a mentor for me for probably about 10 or 12 years. And he taught me so many things. It was unbelievable, but he was a guy that was way, way, way ahead of his time, right? Just was very talented, figured things out. And one thing that he really taught me, and I say it quite a bit when I'm doing seminars, is that little things make a huge difference when it comes to fishing. It could just be like putting a quick snap, a little tiny snap on a small jig where it gets it to rock side by side. It could be just the difference of how you're putting your night crawler threaded onto the onto your jig. It could be something so simple as just be going from a 16th ounce jig down to an 1/8 ounce or an 1/8 ounce to a 16th ounce. It could be the difference between using mono that sinks a lot slower and versus using a super braid that sinks faster to get the fish to bite. I mean, there's millions of different scenarios when it comes to fishing. And again, that's an absolutely huge thing is, again, for me, is constantly learning over and over and more. I'm like a sponge. I just want to learn everything there is. And I'm the kind of guy that definitely does not know it all and probably never will and hopefully never will know it all. And that's the part about fishing is you're always learning. The other part is, too, is that really what got me really into fishing super and as far as testing my abilities and skills were when I got into guiding. And when you start looking at the guiding world, like my beliefs are always that the fish are always biting somehow, somewhere. I don't always figure it out every day. There's some days, some weeks that I struggle. But here's the thing. When you have clients in your boat and they're paying you really good money, you know what? And some people save up a long time. I've got clients that some only do a trip once every 3 years with me because of that's what their income can afford, right? And I have other people that do, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 trips a year with me because that's what their income can afford, right? But either way, it doesn't matter, is that when they jump in my boat, I always tell everybody, you are going to learn so much more if the fishing is tough versus if the fishing is really good and easy. Because if it's good and easy, we might only hit maybe a half a dozen spots. We might only do one or two techniques, and that's it. But if the fishing's tough, you got me for 8 hours. I don't give up on anything, right? So it's a grind. We're going to hit so many spots. We're going to do so many different techniques. You know, I'm going to give it everything that I got, you know, and that's the part where a real guide comes into play, is that a real guide comes into play when it's tough, right? Because here's the thing. The fishing's tough, so you got to keep your clients, you got to keep them in pace, like you got to keep them enthused of what's going on, right? Otherwise, they're going to give up on you, and I never let my clients give up on me. I always keep them sparked, keep that spark in them all the time, and that's an absolutely huge thing right there, and just and that's how, like, learning how to adjust to the people that you're with. You know, the interesting part about the guiding world is that, like, you don't know, you know, when you meet somebody, what side of the aisle they're on, what the political stance they have. You don't know what religious stance they have. You don't know a lot of things about them. So the cool part about the guiding is that you figure these things out. You always let them start talking instead of trying to take control of the situation and right away start talking about things that, like, might tick somebody off, right? You know? So you really gotta, you know, no matter what, you know, the big thing about guiding is you gotta really understand that the day is not about you. It's about whoever is jumping in your boat. It's about them, right? So if you might not agree on some of the things that they might have to say, but you just kind of blend with it, right? You know, and that's the cool part I love about guiding, because I have guided, I've been very fortunate, and I've guided a lot of athletes. I've guided a lot of politicians. I actually guided John Boehner when he was the Speaker of the House, so he was third in command. Wow. The amount of Capitol Police and security that was around when them trips went down was, like, incredible. But, you know, and I've also guided people that, like I say, that if they've saved their money for 3 years to do a trip with me, and I cherish people like that more than I cherish, you know, anything, because it's just so cool, and they're so excited to be with you and spend time with you, you know? So no matter what's happening in your life, you know, my life, I can't, if I'm going into it because I woke up and for some reason I got a flat tire or this happened or that happened, it's, they don't care to hear about that. They only want to hear about the good things that are going. So really being positive is really been, that's a major bonus when it comes to being a guide, right? Nobody wants to fish with the negative Nelly, right? You know? So no, it's just, there's so many interesting things about the outdoor world and the guiding part of it and the amount of stories that have been created and the experiences. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's very unique for sure, I would say, on that end. And I feel very blessed to be in the position I'm in. You know, I never would say this to tell everybody this up till about a year ago. I only graduated from ninth grade. I got kicked out of school. I was a fighter because I was ADH. I had all this energy and I didn't have nowhere to throw it. So what, I was one of them kids that was a class clown. Mean kid, you know, fighting everybody and anything, you know, and, you know, just again, because I didn't know how to control all this energy that I had, you know. And once I got kicked out of school and I basically was living on my own when I was 15 years old, running my own apartment when I was 15, I had two different jobs. I started my first job. I really started off when I got kicked out of school, as I started off working in a Chinese restaurant, washing dishes, right? And then I got another job stocking shelves at a grocery store. So, you know, it's one of them kind of things where I always say this, is that I'm so fortunate growing up that I had absolutely nothing, right? Nothing at all. And because, you know, when you grow up and you grow up with nothing and all of a sudden you start accumulating things, you definitely take care of things a lot more and you cherish these things that you have because you're not, you weren't spoiled as a kid growing up. You know, you didn't have all these things. And the other part is that the biggest thing is to remember is a couple things, is to always be extremely humble in life. And the other part is, and this is absolutely huge and I live by this, is in that it kind of reverts back to the humble part, is that I know that God can take away everything I have in a blink of an eye, right? Everything I have can be gone. And so really, that's a huge thing for me, is again, like, I never in a million years thought I would own two farms, right? And they're big farms, right? I never thought I had all these material things. And I'm not really a material kind of guy, but I never thought that I would have four incredibly great kids, a good wife, right? I mean, just, I'm very, very fortunate, you know? And, you know, the thing is that, like, one of my most valuable things, or some of my most valuable things that I have, are definitely my four kids, right? I look at my four kids. I have three boys and my daughter, right? All four of my kids are leaders, not followers. All three of my boys are electrical linemen, and they're all either supervisors or foremen. They lead in everything they do. My daughter's in commercial safety. She's got her pilot's license. She's another leader, right? You know, and that's the great part about it, is like, nothing but the farms, the trucks, the boats, any of that stuff is all irrelevant. Only thing that really matters in life are definitely your kids, right? When you look at your kids, what a thing to be proud of, to look at these kids and see that they're not a burden to society. And, you know, unfortunately, I cannot take a lot of credit raising these kids. Their mom did an incredible, incredible job raising them kids. She gave them all the love. I gave them all the discipline and work. I worked these kids to death, right? And, you know, good, it's a good thing it all kind of panned out, right? You know, that perfect balance between work. You know, I always say this, if something would have happened to their mom, this would have been a military camp at my house, because that's the way I am, right? But having their mom there for that love and the passion and the nurturing was absolutely so important. And then I'll take a little bit of credit on my end, the work, hard work, right? You know, the kids never went, you know, when it came to anything, they wanted something. They all had their own money, because they all had side jobs. They all did. They all worked. And, you know, they worked, you know, since they were 9, 10 years old, and had their own money. And that, because that's the way it was around here, right? And having a farm, you know, we had animals. I used to raise deer. I used to raise elk. And we had beef. There was always responsibilities and things to do, right? So that's another. I mean, I could just go on and on about the farming. Like farming, one of the saddest things in this country that has happened is that we have lost hundreds and thousands of farms. In one of the biggest really regrets are is that what the worst thing that losing all these farms is that really what comes from farms is the work ethic, right? And that is absolutely huge. Like anybody that owns a business and they get somebody that comes in there and on their application, it says that they worked on a farm or lived on a farm, right? They come right to the top of the list, because typically people that come from that background have a very good work standard, right? And that's absolutely huge. So anyways, yeah. So that, I mean, that's, I threw a lot of stuff at you.
I love it.
But there's always a lot of stuff going on. Like I said, I mean, there's things are very deep, but you know, again, the things that I definitely cherish are definitely my four kids, and I'm very proud of all four of them. And I am definitely a firm believer in Jesus Christ. And I tell you, I'm a kid that grew up drugs, alcohol, you know, I have, when it comes to the Ten Commandments, I have broke probably almost every one of them commandments, right? And like I said, I should have been gone off this earth a long time ago, but for some reason, God's grace, He's keeping me here and keeping me going, and I have no idea why. But I also do know that any day that He could take me, and you know, this is the greatest part about like the situation that I'm in. If I went to the doctor tomorrow and they told me I had cancer and I was gonna only live for 30 days, I would be more than fine with that, right? That's a really good place to be in your life when you're not worried about dying. It's called faith, man. Like, you got to have that faith, right? You definitely yes. got to have that faith. And, you know, I used to be embarrassed. I used to be shy about talking about my faith, but I've been put in some situations lately that, you know, and I'm going to stand firm on that. Anyways, yeah, I mean, the passion that I have for people is going back to that part, is that being very humble is a great thing for sure, and really loving your neighbor is huge, and just being passionate. And do I still get mad at people? Dang right I do, right? You know, I'm out guiding every day, and I'll tell you what, these people are following us all the time and on top of us all the time. You know, you do get mad about it, but you just look at things in a different way nowadays. You know, you just, I don't know, I'm getting a little softer or getting a little bit more compassionate. Either something's going on there, but you know, it's one of them kind of things where every day when I get up at between 2:30 and 3 every morning, I walk outside. I give thanks to God that He gave me another opportunity and woke me up again, which I most of the time don't understand why, because I certainly don't deserve it, you know. But I just enjoy the day and be very fortunate to be able to do the things I do. And, you know, one thing I say this quite a bit too is that, like, the thing I don't like about being somebody that's on TV all the time and in a, you know, high profile person is that something that people need to understand, I'm just a below average human being, right? I really am, right? I'm nobody special for sure, but I'm very fortunate to be in the situation I'm in. And I had a lot of help to get me to this point of my career, right? I didn't do it on my own. I can tell you that. There are so many people that without them, I would have never even came close to where I'm at, you know? And I think about that all the time. You know, one thing is that when you're very fortunate and you have people that help you out, is that you never want to forget where you come from, right? That's a huge thing. You might not always agree with the people that have helped you out and down that road and on that path that you're on. But the thing is, you never turn your back on them no matter what. You know, here's the deal. I've said this many times, and I love to do seminars. And when I first started doing seminars, you know, 25, 30 years ago, I was very nervous. And it was understanding. But when you live something like I live the outdoors every day, the fishing part, the hunting part, you know, so it's easy for me to, and again, I do not know it all, right? That's, and I don't want people to ever think that I do know it all, but it's hard to write a book when you don't have the experience, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's easy to write a book when you have 30 some years of experience and things that have happened. It's easy to speak and to do seminars when you have that confidence, because again, the things that you've experienced in your life, right? So I can just tell you this, you know, like I can, when I talk to people about that are going through problems with drugs and alcohol, I can relate to them, right? I can talk to them because, hey, you know what? I've gone through that stuff in my life and been very fortunate to be able to pull away from it. And the thing that got me back on track was always the fishing part of it. You know, I always say to people like this, like, you know, you don't go to a marriage counselor if it's a person. The first thing I would ask that marriage counselor, how long have you been married? If he says, well, I'm not married, I'm like, why are you telling me about, trying to counsel me about a marriage, right? Or it's vice versa about if you're going to a drug counselor, like, have you ever been hooked on drugs, right? If he says no, I've never done any drugs, I'd be like, why are you trying to tell me something because you've never experienced it, right? Until you experience something, it's hard to talk about it. So for me, on the fishing part, 30 some years of doing it full time, it's a lot easier for me to talk about because I do know about a few things and have had a lot of different scenarios and a lot of experience in situations of things that people are asking me about. So it's so natural to be able to speak about them kind of things and be enthused and be educated. Do you know it all again? No, you don't, but you do know some things, right? So to get people on the right track, you know, and educating people is very fun because, you know, the reason I started this TV show was I look at what fishing has done for me. If it wasn't for fishing, I would definitely be not here on this planet, right? Because I was down the, you know, with all the drugs and the alcohol and all the other crazy things that went on in my life when I was younger. If it wasn't for the fishing to pull me back, to get me away from all these addictive bad things, I would have definitely, you know, been gone by now, you know. So by starting the TV show, I thought to myself, if I can start this TV show and I can save one kid from the things that I experienced, the bad things I've experienced, and turn them into, get him addicted into something that's good, like fishing, right? Well worth it, right? All the money I've spent, you know, on this TV show, all the time, all the effort, if I can save one person, a job accomplished, a mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
That's
dude.
friends to me, right? I'm not looking at saving 100 people or thousands of people. I'm looking at saving one person, just like I was saved.
Yeah. I got to get one fishing story out of you, Larry. So that's pretty customary on my podcast. We usually pick a fishing topic or this or that, but you know, for this, we're learning so much about you, but also just we're learning a lot. I think anybody can pick out a lot of things that would be very, very beneficial to themselves or to their fishing game in this whole conversation already. But I do want to ask you a fishing story, and I don't really know, you know, about your career. I would have never really particularly known any good stories, you know, to ask you for or about specifically. I probably would have just tossed that into your lap and let you pick, but I'm going to actually ask you about one that I learned about in this conversation that I really want to hear the details on. And that is your second place Lake Erie tournament that you brought up earlier. I would love to hear more like
Well,
that tournament story.
that's a very, you know, and that's a very interesting story, and I'll tell you that story. So, you know, the economy was really starting. I think this was 08, and the economy was really starting to get bad, right? And my wife said, you know, my wife was just working part time for, so we had insurance. She's got a degree in criminal justice. She went to school for ultrasound. She's got all the education. She's a smart lady, and you know, but we were firm believers in staying home, that her mission, her job was to stay home with these kids, right? Anyway, so I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna go fish this first tournament of the year. It's on Lake Erie, and if I don't win this thing, I'm done. I'm not gonna fish any more tournaments. So, anyways. You know, and this is the FLW. You know, it's a 2-day qualifier, and then the third day, the top 10 fish, right? So, anyways, going into the third day, I was sitting in second place,
Well, what time of
and
year was it?
this was in April, right? April or beginning of May, right? So, anyways, so. There's 10 of us, and we all go, you know, the last day with 10 of us fishing, and I'm in second place. And the first place guy, this Johnson guy, I forget his first name, he's got me by about 18 pounds. So there's no way that I am going to be able to win this tournament, you know? So here's an interesting part. So I got Billy Linder in my boat, you know, part of the Linder
Yeah,
family.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got Billy Linder in my boat, and we're out, and I got a Corso co-angler, and we go out, and the first hour I'm struggling, and I start putting it together, and I just absolutely start wrecking them. Like, we are catching 8 to 10 pound fish like no tomorrow, like everything. But and I'm as cool as can be because I know I can't win this thing, you know, but I'm having fun, right? So, you know, and I figure if I can just stay in second place, that's fine, no big deal, right? You know, so anyways, Billy gets a phone call it like 3/4 of the way through the day from one of the other guys that's fishing with this Johnson guy, you know. And this Johnson guy is only got one. Billy's not supposed to be telling me this,
Right,
but
right, right.
this Johnson guy has only got one walleye. He's struggling, right? And Billy's like, "You're not going to believe this, Larry." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Johnson's only got one fish, and it's only about a 6-pounder. And we got, you know, we already got, you know, we got our limit, and we're, you know, we're just upgrading. I mean, like, I can't do anything wrong, you know." Now I start getting nervous. I'm like, "Oh my God, I got a chance to win this thing," you know. So now I'm really, you know, going crazy. I'm fired up. I'm dialed in things more and more and more. Anyways. So we're going in, and he calls, you know, his buddy that was fishing with this Johnson guy, and he said, "What's he got?" He says, "He's only got four fish, right?" And Billy's like, "Larry, you're gonna win this." Like, so he's telling me ahead of time, "I'm gonna win this." Oh my gosh, no, I'm a wreck, right? No, I mean, I'm like, oh my gosh. And it's 100 grand, you know, and 100 grand back then, 100 grand still a lot of money, but 100 grand back then, that was absolutely more than I would make in a whole year, right? One tournament, right? So anyways, we go in And I'm up on there's a bum tank, you know, I got my fish in the basket, you know, and I'm chit-chatting with who's ever across from me. And this is 100% true story. So it's my turn to go up by the bump judge, right? And so I didn't even look at my fish, you know, I'm just absolutely jacked up. I get up by the bump judge, and one of my walleye spits up this like 12-inch perch. This is 100% true. I would have caught it before that, I had the legal right to put that back into that fish's mouth. But since I was bullshit and chit-chatting with whoever was across from me and never even thought about it, because I have never really had that happen, right? And, you know, the bump judge takes that perch and he waves it in my face and he throws it on the ground, and then they go up to weigh in. And anyways, and my weight comes up. I got great weight. I forget what it was. You know, I'm like, and I'm still think I'm winning. And anyways, then Johnson comes up behind me and he wins it by 6 ounces. Well, that perch that he threw out of there was a lot more than 6 ounces, right? You know? So it was one of them kind of things where I really wasn't, I wasn't I wasn't devastated or anything, just because, again, I knew that it was because I promised her if I did not win that tournament, I would be done fishing tournaments. Because if I would have won that tournament, I would have fished for the next 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wouldn't have gave up, right? I would have kept her going. But it all worked out absolutely perfect, right? It did. Oh, it was like, you know, it's amazing how your destiny is chosen way before you even get there, right? You know, in that whole story, I'm telling you, there's a lot more detail in it, but that was 100% true. And matter of fact, like most of that, like you can go back on the old, you know, FLW, you know, because all that stuff was filmed, the winners filmed all that, you can see all that, right? I don't know if he shows the perch being thrown out, but I think they do, but it's as true as the day is long. But yeah, it was something, you know.
Wow. How were you catching them?
Pulling cranks, but I was pulling double cranks on the lines. I was running two cranks on each line, because in Ohio you can still run three lines, but you can run two cranks off of each line. And I just had it dialed in, and I was running crawlers on the back of the crankbaits too, you know, which was a huge asset back then. And that also at that time, reef runners were just starting to get popular. And I had Scott Stecker, the old owner, the original, you know, guy that, you know, invented the reef runners. I had some custom baits that he had given me, and again, that was something that a lot of them fish haven't seen, you know, because they were so new, right? So I had a few tricks in that I was pulling, but like I said, you know, sometimes you got everything just dialed right in, you can't do any wrong. And that was just one of them days where I was, like I said, I was just dialed in, and for 3/4 of the day there really wasn't any pressure, because I was just trying to maintain that second place, which is, you know, I had a 6-pound lead on second, you know, but an 18-pound heat. Johnson had 18-pound lead on me on first. Like I said, I didn't have any chance in the world. You know, I didn't think I had any chance in the world to win that tournament until, you know, I found out from Billy, you know. So yeah, that's a, you know, and again, to have, of all people to have filming in my boat, Billy Linder, right? You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, if you ever see him, you can ask him that story, and I'm sure he'll tell you exactly what I said. Yeah, that's a very interesting story.
So that was the last big tournament that you fished?
The last tournament I ever fished. I never even fished another local tournament.
Really?
I got 100% out of tournaments, right? And I fished everything. I mean, I fished all the local, the Merck National, all our big local tournaments. I fished the MWC. You know, I fished NAWA, you know, and then I ended up going and fishing the PWT. And then when the PWT started losing its fizz, I went to the you know, FLW, started fishing that, because that was the big tournament series. Yeah, you know, so I mean, yeah, I mean, so I was very fortunate to fish all them tournaments when they were, you know, they were like, they were on fire. Like that tournament world for walleyes, you know, there's that thing, it's nothing like that anymore, right? You know, them tournaments, there's still some good tournaments around, but, you know, the money's not there. And you gotta, like back then, there was, you know, out of 150 pros fishing them tournaments, there was probably 50 or 60 guys that were doing it full time, right? You don't see that anymore, right? There might be four or five guys now, maybe 10 at the most, doing it full time, and there's probably not even that anymore, you know. Well, on the walleye side, bass is a totally different story, but on the walleye side, yeah.
Yeah, so, like those old the highlights of like them old RCLs and stuff are they just look unbelievable.
Yeah,
you know, they just look like they were a lot of fun and obviously a big deal.
Oh,
and,
they were so much. Oh, it was that was, you know, the cool part too was about all that kind of stuff is that like the guys that you traveled with, every, you know, if you were smart, you teamed up with some guys, you know, and I did the same thing. You traveled with them and they just became your second family because you spend so much time with them. I did take my boys with me. Almost in the summer when we were fishing tournaments, I always took one of my boys with me, and you know, they pre-fish with me, and then during the tournament they would always help out, like Jim Kelkoffen or, you know, Sonny and Reynolds, and I mean they would help out at the tournaments when I was actually fishing them, you know. So it was a cool experience for them kids too to be able to travel with me too, you know. So yeah, lots of good memories, you know. Like I said, it's just it you know, I feel very fortunate again to look back at some of this stuff and think about, you know, all the exciting things that have happened in my career. Would I have done it again if I could look back and take a crystal ball and look back at it? I don't know if I would, right? The only reason I say that is because I jeopardized a lot of things in my life with my family, because the thing about when you get into the fishing world is that it consumes everything that you have, right? And you're talking to a guy that like can go, you know, not so much anymore, but if I have to, I could. But I could go up to 3 days without sleeping at all, right? I mean, I traveled all the time. I would guide all day long, and then when I get home, I would jump in my load my vehicle up and go to wherever. Ohio, you know, Kentucky, Kansas, wherever we were fishing a tournament, you know, Montana, and I would drive all night and get out there, pre-fish, and the same thing when the tournament was over, I always drove straight home and guided the next day, right? Mm. Yeah, it's just never stopped ever, right? And how I made it, you know, all them times, made it home with no sleep and got home just in time to guide the next day, you know, 12-hour drives, 14-hour drive home, you know, I could just, you start thinking about all this stuff. I could talk about stories and stories and stories. And for some reason, again, you look back at this and you're like, there's no way without a little help that, you know, from somebody watching over you that I made it home all the time and was able to do the things that I was able to do, right?
You're so, supposed to be here, Larry. There's no doubt about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Well, yeah, I got some more stories I could tell you. I just got into a head-on collision this fall where a lady came into my lane. We collided at 100, they estimated that 130 miles an hour. She ripped the front axles off my 3/4-ton truck. Nobody got hurt. I don't know how. Whoa. The first accident I have ever been in, because I used to drive semi too, right? So, yeah, it's just, yeah, I mean, just I got so many things that I could tell you that are just like that. Last fall was one of them falls where I had three different situations, and we won't talk about them right now, but that I could, all three of them I could have been gone really easy, right? So,
yeah. Well, I definitely have a ton of ideas on things, stories and fishing stories and things that I got to get from you. But for the sake of time, you've been very generous with your time. I try not to go too much longer than an hour, and I feel like if I asked you any more questions, it would just be a rabbit hole. We'd both just, it'd be way too late, and you probably got a guide tomorrow too. So
oh yeah,
so.
I'm definitely guiding tomorrow. Yeah, we got 26 guys tomorrow. So yeah,
of course you do. Yeah. Well, man, this is long overdue to reach out to you to come on the podcast, but I just felt like, as a fan of yours, you know, my news feed or the algorithms kind of feed you your videos that it knows I like, you know, and I've always just kind of, you know, watched your videos. But once I started to kind of pursue your, you know, your channel and more videos, I realized that you do a lot more. You do a lot of things that I wasn't even aware of then. And then it's just kind of been an evolution as a fan of yours to realize that there's just so many more layers to your career and you as a person and as an angler. But I knew that there was just like so much more than even somebody like myself that has, like I said, been a fan of your educational content and entertaining content for, you know, a long time. I feel like I would have guessed that I knew quite a bit about you as a professional just from what I've seen and what you've taught me. But I realized there's not a whole lot of things that I feel like I know about you that are really cool and things that I can really, really take away from. And I think people relate to that as well. And so everything you've shared here is like just like above and beyond what I hope that I could, you know, have learned from you, and just all the personal stories and you know, talking about your faith and how that contributes to you, who you are as a man and as an angler, is so important to you. It's important to me too to hear that as a fan of yours, and so it's all awesome stuff.
Well, that's why I always say at the end of the show, or, you know, at the end of anything seminar, I always say this, and I live by this, is that it is a great day to be alive, and people have to realize that no matter what's going on in your life, you know, you have to realize that once you're gone, you're never coming back to this place, right? Your body's not coming back to this place, right? So, right. And you got to be very fortunate. Like I said, it is amazing that, like, that some of them, if you have, I just want to tell people this. One of the most important things that I've realized in my life now, getting older and slowing down a little bit, just with my brain starting to think about things and watching these kids, you know, it's an interesting thing when you have kids, the value that they put into your life, is that, like, as your kids get older, you think that you don't worry about them as much. Like when they're younger, you worry about them a lot. But as they get older, you actually worry about them more. And this is something that's very, very, very important, especially from this day on, to remember, is that one of the most important things that you could ever do is pray for protection for your children. If you pray every day for that, God protects your children and your grandchildren, if you have grandchildren, that is one of the most important things that you could ever, ever do in your life. I'm just telling you that. I don't know a lot of things in life, but them things I definitely can tell you. If you ever are going to listen to anything that I have to tell you, please listen to them things.
Man, I appreciate that, Larry. That's going to be how we're signing this off.
Well, that's a great way to close it off. I can tell you that, because it really is very, it's very important. It's so important to pray for them kids.
Thanks, Larry.
Yep. God bless. Yep,
right bye. On, man. We'll be in touch. All right, later, buddy. Man.
Yeah, thanks. Yep, bye.